What's up, guys? It's Hard Rock Nick, one of the richest men in the world, and welcome to Phantom Unchained, the show you're too scared to tell your girlfriend that you watch. Quit your crying, put on your big boy panties, and let's get this show on the road. P.S. Beavis is my baby daddy. Hard Rock Nick, the fuck out.
What's happening, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Austin with FTM Alerts, and welcome to Phantom Unchained, episode number, what are we on?
36?
Shit, 36. They're all blurring together, man. With me, as always, my wonderful co-host, Mr. Crypto Clay, $24, back from hanging out with Fidel Castro for the last 2 weeks, Double Sharp, and Justin. Justin Beavis, you look rough, bro. What's going on?
My haircut is the real problem.
He hasn't stopped coding. He's just...
My hair has been this, like, messy in a long time.
Oh, my God.
It's a reflection of the market.
Yeah, we have so much going on. I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like Hard Rock Nick's a little bit played out. Like, I feel like we're kind of at the point to where we should have a scantily clothed woman start our show to just like add some sort of, you know, reason for people to watch this shit. I don't know. All right. Let's get the hell after it. We can just loosely talk about the market because, you know, I've just been like throwing up charts, showing RSI bottoms for the last year and a half. And here we are, right, 24? So let's talk about the market and what might happen here. Crypto Clay, that's bring me. Us home with some stats, baby.
Cool. I do think it's an important topic, particularly because of the like just the level of toxicity on CT grows immensely in these kind of, you know, just in these markets, and it gets really bad, honestly. And I think it's important to take a step back and really like look at where we are. From some folks have been through these crashes, 2017, you know, COVID crash, all that stuff. Yeah. And some people haven't. And so, like, you know, if we look at the macro perspective, like GDP, you know, a negative GDP was the first sign of some type of recession, and that was Q1. We'll get the numbers for Q2, obviously, as it's over. But, you know, I think that we are in, I think it's pretty clear that we're in some form of recession, and I think we could expect, you know, things to get more turbulent as we go. The VIX is super high, the Dixie, we always talk about it, right? What's interesting, I think, is like equities seem to have this priced in. Like they responded pretty well to the Fed rate hike that happened a few weeks ago. I think the credit markets are starting to price it in, but all of that basically just leads to more volatility. And I think, you know, 24 probably has things to say on this, but this stuff can take a long time to play out. And bonds haven't priced in any future price impact. Energy hasn't priced it in. And the Fed will use that as a reason to continue these rate hikes. And every time we get a rate hike, you're going to get a market response. If the equity market goes down, generally Bitcoin seems to be moving in some type of correlation to it. So it's a long way of saying that we are a long way off from true economic recovery, and people need to be smart about how they use their money. But this is a great opportunity to DCA and do all the things. If you wanted to pick up bags and you have loose cash, just, you know, now's the time to start to look into projects that are fundamentally solid. You know, I think BTC is probably heading towards its exponential moving average, as we saw that big wick down today. And like what I would say from my experience in 2017, like I got into Nexo in the ICO for like 6 cents. I think it went to like 80 cents that, you know, that December. I didn't sell anything. And it went back down to like 1 cent, and it rode there for honestly 2 years. And I sat on it until summer of 2021, and it went up to like $4.06 at its ath. And so I guess that's a story of like getting something early. It completely lost all value. I didn't sell. I rode it out. But when the bull market comes back, things come with it. And I think that's what, you know, altcoins especially, right? You see this flow of BTC to ETH to alts as money rotates, and most of the capital is out of the market right now. And so that's kind of where we are, and just be patient. Like, it sucks and it's awful, but that's really kind of, that's been my experience so far.
Yeah. And some of the comments saying I'm 24 cents, maybe right now I'm $2.4, but I wouldn't go all the way down to 24 cents. It's a big drop. That's a big crash.
Y'all need to give him a break. Look at that shirt he's wearing. Y'all yes. better put some respect on that name, dude. All right, go 100%. Ahead,
24. But Clay, to add on to your point, there's a lot of global mechanisms and things that are happening that are beyond crypto. Like, if you look at crypto at a scale, it's a small part of like the global economy. So for things to rebound, the whole world needs to rebound economically. There's a lot of things. I was just in Cuba, and inflation there is getting crazy. So there's a lot of things that kind of need to be addressed at first, but take care of yourself first is what I say. Like, you got to, maybe if you're relying on your crypto or you're relying on your investments, maybe reduce, I don't know, unprofitable ventures, as my friend Young CB said. Kind of take a step back, take care of yourself mentally and physically first, and sit in cash or stables if you want to. Like, I wouldn't, like, I'm not giving any financial advice here, but I want people to be prepared for potentially the worst. Like, we could be in this for the next 1 to 2 years in terms of just sitting at current prices, if not lower. So protect yourself. There's a lot of like psyops out there on the internet, on Twitter, and just kind of take care of yourself first and foremost is what I want people to do. Don't try and wreck yourself trying to catch bottoms, or, you know, just make sure you and yourself are 100% whole before you kind of dive back into things, in my opinion.
Yeah, the two things I'll add to that are, I read some of the, and I know we're going to get into Coinbase, but I read some of their quarterly earnings report. And something that stood out to me was the retail monthly transactions. So how many transactions are retail actually executing on Coinbase dropped from like 11.9 million to 9.1 million from Q4 to Q1, which is part of the, you know, why their earnings took a hit. But like, that just shows how risk off everyone is becoming. So just be patient. It's going to, you know, it's going to take a while. But the other thing, I think on the positive side, we're in an election year. And I think that the president knows that, and they usually try to bake in some special sauce.
Really, really good point. I mean, I don't know. Did you guys see yesterday, not to go too far down that rabbit hole, but did you see yesterday, like, the U.S. government opened up an investigation into Elon Musk formally? And it's like, try and do something different. And then, now you're going to take away their electionary play toy in Twitter, and they are coming for your ass. Like, that's basically, or at least what it sounds like to me. But, you know, I can't hate on this administration too much, because that money printer is what drove prices up. I mean, that was a bull run move. And so obviously a big correction is going to happen. I think the biggest thing that we're going to need to overcome, which is going to take probably a little while, is going to be sentiment. And if you truly are looking at, I mean, if you're looking at phantom projects, which I assume if you're on here, you probably are looking at Boo and Beethoven and things like that. You know, that's an alt of an alt, right? So we're like way down the shitcoin rabbit hole here. And I own all of those. So like, I'm not knocking them, but keep the phrase runway in your head. Look for runway. Who has runway? Who's going to be able to make it through? Should this last for a year or even 2 years? Right. And in March 2020, like anyone that was around for then can tell you, the voices were doing the same thing. This is the end of crypto. It's never going to recover. It's all going to shit. And what happened was they sold, and they basically would get angry at you if you said that a recovery was even possible. Right now, March in 2020 is when I bought Phantom, basically for the first time, and started loading my bag. So opportunity abounds when shit hits the fan. Beebus, you're looking a little blurry there.
I don't know what just happened.
we gotta fix you, bro. But nevertheless, runway, and the reason I mentioned runway is because that's something that if you are going to bank on the Phantom ecosystem and the Phantom network as a whole, that's probably a question that you may want to know is, does the Phantom Foundation have sufficient runway? And I posed that question this morning before the show, and the response that I got was that they have at least 10 years of runway at the current burn rate with 40 employees. That's very, very encouraging. That means that you know, this could go on for an extended period of time, and they will be perfectly fine, and the ecosystem will have, you know, the ability to flourish. We don't have, like, those existential threats like, you know, an algo stable coin that's intrinsically attached to the network. I mean, we do have them, and they're being absorbed by this current dip, which is going to be one of our next topics. But just a little, you know, a little understanding that the Phantom Foundation is very well positioned from a financial standpoint. The development will continue. The network will continue. I am not changing any of the bets that I've made. And I'm also in a position to where if those bets take a year or two to play out, no problem. I'm ready to ride that with them. So, okay. Now, for the segment that will be exclusively for Beavis, let's talk about UST and Luna for a second. No, I'm just, but you were reverberating in the back of my head over the last week, bro. So
called it, man.
Lessons from UST and Luna. What happened? What have we learned? What are the key takeaways? Who has the nitty gritty, like, actual information on this?
I mean, honestly, some of you probably at this point do, because I was not here at all yesterday, and, you know, I honestly, like, wrote Luna off a long time ago. I think what I've learned is when you are looking at, you know, leaders of really big projects, and they seem overconfident, and that overconfident isn't matched by a ton of investment in risk management, then you should probably run in the other direction. And it seemed like there was some level of risk management, i.e. they were, like, cashing out at the top, you know, and, you know, they cashed out $3 billion or whatever of UST to USDC. So they have runway. If anybody has runway, they have runway. But I don't know how they recover from this reputationally. I really don't know what they do. They can't safely contract, as far as I can tell. They can't really, like, they grew too much too fast. And it's the reason that a lot of the stablecoin protocols you see are like, we're only minting $1 million today. We're only minting $2 million today. We're only minting $10 million this month. It's because if you grow too big and you don't have the treasury or the traffic or the volume or the usership to actually contract safely down to a normal economic level, then when that bubble pops, it's just going to be pure destruction. And I kept thinking, you know, the first person to design a minimally collateralized stablecoin that can safely contract is going to be, like, a big winner. But to be honest, I think, like, the problem is there's minimal collateralization. I don't know if it's possible to safely contract something that's so grossly overvalued. And it's like people taking the stablecoin moniker and building an entire brand around it just so they can facilitate what is objectively an extremely unstable, kind of scary asset. And it, you know, I tweeted about this a couple months ago with regards to Luna, but it's like how, you know, all of these subprime mortgage lenders or whatever were taking these mortgages and then, like, trimming the fat and organizing them into derivatives so they could classify them as AAA rated. It's kind of the same thing. They're taking, like, I mean, with Luna, it's literally just like they're taking, you know, whatever social and whatever capital backing they have and repackaging that into a stable coin. And it's like, you know, I said a couple months ago or a month ago or whatever that they're going to drag a lot of DeFi into the dirt with them. And that's happening right now. And, you know, this shit just, like, it shouldn't be allowed to get out of hand like this. I mean, it's like, you know, Bernie Madoff type shit. And, you know, you can see it from a mile away, but retail doesn't give a fuck. Retail just wants, you know, infinite money. So,
well, now and this is going to be a huge talking point for mainstream media. I mean, they're going to latch on to what happened here as a case study of of crypto needing regulation. I mean, it was almost, dude, somebody screenshot that shit. It was almost like really almost the perfect storm of, you know, them wiggling their way into what we're doing here. It's like they were just waiting on that. And I see people mentioning the Terra blockchain halted. From what I just saw, I just looked at the announcement.
Yeah, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, it looks like they're doing that to prevent governance attacks, because Tweak just said they hit 32 billion Luna. Like, you know, they're having to expand that apparently to get UST off the market, is my understanding. Like, this is a recovery plan. I don't know. You know, I do want to say that, like, you know, regardless of the reasons that it happened, a lot of our friends, a lot of people that we know and have interacted with are hurting as a result of this. And, you know, my heart goes out to you guys. And I hope that, you know, you don't give up on crypto because of that. And we've said it before, and I think everyone wanted to have, I really truly do think everyone kind of wanted to have hope that this iteration of an algo stable was going to be the one that was the one that was going to make it happen. Maybe not JB, but, you know, or maybe they were hoping they got too big to fail.
Did you see Doquan invented Basis Cash? Well, he didn't invent it, but he was on the original Basis Cash.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
That was the real big news. If you're like a developer, that's like,
yeah,
oh my God, like, round two fight, you know, it's like really insane. And then, like, you know, the institutional withdrawals of USDC and DAI from Curve, you know, the USDT craziness, the USDT FUD, it's like pure capitulation at the moment. And I mean, I, like, you know, I don't know enough about macroeconomics to be able to say, it's a recession, you know, but things are looking kind of scary out there. And I just, like, you know, I wish I knew more. You know, I need to get a macroeconomics textbook instead of fucking reading about software nonstop. That's how I'm going to really make money. But yeah, it's kind of scary out there for real.
I was cracking up in the King's group this morning. Somebody pops in, you know, Harry was in here in there chatting, and man, I like Harry. Like, as a human, I really like Harry. I'm not a Tomb fan, but I do generally like Harry. And somebody pops in and said, well, you know what you should do is you should institute a tax on every time somebody sells Tomb. And I'm going, you're fucking kidding me, right? Like, do you
know should have taxes, we should have military.
You know that's where it came from, right? Like, you know that's how it was built initially, and it was removed, and it was just like, Daddy Burb was in there with me. He's like, we've come full circle. Yep, we've come. Hey, this is how it happens.
So by the way, on the Luna thing, like, they were this close to pulling off what they set out to do. I mean, they had looked at the Frax model. They had started to acquire billions of dollars of Bitcoin. They were getting backed by actual, you know, legitimate, you know, currency, if you will. And they also, if they had gotten $4 billion into that Curve pool, into the four pool, this wouldn't have happened. Like, they would have needed $3 billion to empty that thing, to trigger the depegging, to basically have all the mechanisms that fell into place. If they had had the money in the four pool, this could not have happened. So they were damn close to actually being successful, arguably in the right way, which is half algo stable, half collateralization, and in terms of them being backed by something. And so, you know, so I think that, like, it's actually probably going to be a great lesson for whatever comes next. But the way that it happened is just insane. Like, it was just it was like a diabolically perfectly executed plan of buying UST over the counter, buying BTC, shorting BTC, selling it, triggering the depegging, flooding the Binance market with UST. I mean, it was like, it's pretty freaking crazy.
I mean, like, whenever there is lopsided risk between two parties, when the proper conditions hit, it becomes an eventuality that is going to be corrected. And with these uncollateralized assets, like, they're operating, taking on an insane amount of counterparty risk. And it's literally just bears. Everybody knows, everybody's waiting on the sidelines for the right opportunity. And once that opportunity hits, like, you know, I'm, again, like, not well versed in, like, probability and, you know, how something like that could technically be, like, considered, like, you know, a really high probability of happening. Because if you look at, you know, what is the EV of Lunar? What is the EV of UST? What is the probability of it failing? If you look at how lopsided the risk was, like, and you take, okay, every single day for the next, you know, 100 years, there's going to be this chance of Luna failing, or every single second, there's going to be this chance of Luna failing, or this chance of, like, things presenting themselves that would give bears or people who are antagonistic to the peg an opportunity to force Luna to fail. It becomes almost a certainty. And when I, like, am trying to calculate, like, you know, everybody says, especially with, like, crypto hacks or whatever, like, you know, if there's a chance, people are eventually going to find it or whatever, you know, and it's why, like, becoming battle tested and stuff like that is so important. But, you know, that's when things are, like, almost at parity. That's when you're, like, trying really hard to keep things really secure and the economics really tight. And I think they just weren't trying to do that. Like, to me, it seemed like they were, like, no holds barred, pedal to the metal, let's grow as fast as we can, and hopefully outrun this. And the thing is, like, they have nobody to bail them out. Like, VCs can't invent money out of thin air. Like, VCs are going to be the ones taking profits. Like, and it almost makes me think, like, you know, regulation... not to say that it's, like,
easy there, you know, Mark, greatest thing Mark in the world. Cuban.
And I've been talking about this a long time. It's like, you know, retail needs protection, not only because they get hurt, but because they literally act against a protocol's best interest 10 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because of this lopsided risk, and it is in their best interest in the very short term to do that. But it just, you know, it's.
Do you
it's just
would you crazy. Agree? Like, when you say regulation, are you saying, like, you know, regulation being passed that any stablecoin on the market has to be collateralized in some way, or regulation like you have to get licensing through what?
Well,
government?
Regulation just like. so that the market isn't just 100% controlled by Justin Sun, you know?
he's over in Grenada really. Right now, just ripping into
but
the market.
It is like, you know, this market isn't regular, you know? It needs maybe, like, you know, I've talked a lot about self-regulation and whatnot, you know, I've talked a lot about, you know, we've in general talked a lot about, you know, we need regulation for real adoption. We need regulation for this stuff to become popular. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody was like, no way, I'm rich now. Fuck you. And now everybody's poor. So now it's maybe time to, like, revisit this.
I mean, Beavis, if you were running Luna and had that sort of success, like, there was $1 billion sitting on Anchor. And this migration was planned, three pool to four pool. And they had $350 million in liquidity sitting in the three pool. Like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that if someone comes for you and there is some type of bank run and you've got 35% liquidity versus what's on your biggest protocol, by the way, printing UST at 20% for the people that are staking, like, that doesn't take a rocket scientist. Like, from someone who runs a protocol and has to worry about treasury, like, how do you think that gets overlooked? Like, how does that even happen?
Just like... you know,
is an ego
the detractors, like, there are the loud detractors, and the loud detractors are like me, like, who are, like, basically warning you, who aren't really detractors. They're like, oh, you're a futter, fuck you. And, like, the loudest people in an event like that are going to be people who want you to succeed and want you to, you know, not F up, because they know your effing up will ruin their lives. But, like, the real detractors are the ones that are really quiet, just looking. Like, they have their Chainalysis guy constantly staring at three pools, staring at anchor, figuring out when is the best time to move in or make some kind of move. And, like, where there is profit to be made, especially in, like, bearish times like this, people are going to make it. And people are going to seize every opportunity they can to make it. And again, with risk so lopsided, that is a huge opportunity for, you know, people who are kind of gunning for your head, and you just can't give them that opportunity. So why did it get overlooked? I think a panicked rush they were in, definitely. They were probably rushing all this shit. They weren't doing the proper analysis. They weren't taking a data-driven approach. They weren't taking their time. And then two, on top of that, they were probably underestimating, you know, the bad will out there. Because people see, like, you know, people get, like, I get jealous seeing people, like, print money. Like, I'm jealous as fuck when I see, like, ah, dude, we're the U.S. government now. Like, damn, why can't I be the U.S. government, bro? $100 billion. But, it, you know, it's like, you know, I can joke about it, but there are a lot of people with a lot of money who, you know, are sitting back, like, if I take a couple months to really dismantle this thing, I could make $1 billion. And they've made their billions of dollars now. And, you know, it's kind of on to the next thing a little bit. And do I think people will actually learn? No. You know, I think maybe mechanisms will get better designed, but they'll get better designed for the wrong reasons. You know, they won't get designed to enforce, you know, sustainability. They'll get designed to protect against whatever thing happened last time. And, you know, still they'll just, like, go pedal to the metal, try to grow as fast as they can, and lever everyone up and prop up, a market. And, you know, I wish I was smart enough to take all of these things and wrap them into a, I mean, you know, I was like super off risk, but, you know, I wish I could be one of the gods that's like with 100% confidence, you know, I see all this stuff, it's going to happen and I'm going to make $1 trillion off of it. I haven't, like, touched my ledger in, like, months, and I'm like, I begrudgingly broke it out last night. I was like, damn, I got to move some money around. but it's like, I just want to fucking program the computer, you know, and yeah. All these people are over here doing Ponzi schemes, and it's like, dude, that's disrespectful.
You can't say it. It's a P word. It's a P word.
And Did you get any transactions through last night? I think now is probably the lowest gap.
I did. I got it through. Yeah. I wanted to address this guy's comment real quick. Yeah. The only similarity between Luna and Phantom is that they are a layer one smart contract network. That's it. The shit that took Luna down does not actually exist from the side of the Phantom Foundation or the Phantom Network in the minting and burning and the algo stables and all of that shit. Like, look, of course, looking at it now, you can go, oh yeah, no shit. Yeah. FUSD has actually never been pegged, not even once. And it poses no systemic risk to the Phantom Network as of right now, with the exception of, well, there's just no liquidation. So I don't even know what the hell.
Wait, didn't Stake peg it twice before?
Stake, like, pegged briefly. It twice, and then got, there are, like, FUSD whales who just proceeded to dump
it. I know,
it
they redeemed.
Yeah, they didn't, well, if I were to say peg, it would be, it got pegged and then stayed, right?
Yeah.
They may have there's got no it to hit right? a dollar twice, but the fact is there was no mechanism to keep it there. They were hoping that, you know, demand of the market would keep it there, which demand of the market could send it over a dollar if you give enough incentives. So, all right. Actually, FUSD is collateralized by Staked Phantom. That is what collateralizes FUSD. It's the only thing that collateralizes it.
And regular Phantom.
Aren't we about to talk about that?
Well, we're going to, we're going to get into some liquidations later, but I do want to talk about, dude, this shit's funny. Yeah, I know. It's funny when you say pegged. Hilarious. Everybody's into that weird shit. All right. So Coinbase warns, they didn't actually warn. Well, I guess they did. Look, no. If you leave your coins on an exchange, you don't own them. You do not own them. They have no obligation to you. So this language that was used in the Coinbase TNC, which just got more press because it's Coinbase, is the same language that's going to be in every TNC on every exchange. Like if it's on there and they file for bankruptcy or force majeure or whatever the hell they call that shit, same shit. Like you'll be seen as an unsecured creditor, and that's how it works. So it's nothing to be concerned with. It's just how.
Wait till you see what your bank and the government can do.
I know. That was going to be my point.
Y'all are for a rude awakening. I think that should just like promote DeFi. It's like, you know, that's the reason this shit exists. That's the reason we say not your keys, not your crypto. You know. Dude, people go to the hospital all the time for putting stuff in their butts.
We really should go down that road.
Advisory, you know, be careful with, like, you know, be careful.
Be careful with butt stuff. All right, let's talk about the congestion though, because there was a lot of shit going on, and there's still, what's gas at right now? I haven't even
5,000. I have that open at all times.
Dude, the network works so perfectly. Like literally I was getting transactions through no problem. You just need to spend a ton of money on gas, and it works like
it's not even perfectly. A ton either. It's like 1.5 Phantom.
Yeah. I mean, I did a 125 Phantom transaction.
It depends on what you're doing. Yeah. Like if you're sending stuff, 1.5 Phantom. If you're taking stuff off Reaper, 25. You know, it depends.
So real quick, Matt Verville, FUSD will never technically be a stable coin until liquidations are implemented. And
no,
that
can be.
Well,
it just has to have there's no mechanism. There's no interest. There's no liquidations.
There's no nothing.
Marketing.
It's literally just the ERC-20.
There's no psyops.
Laugh at
any more psyops on Phantom.
So all right,
too much psyops on Phantom.
What is actually going on when the network just goes straight bonkers? Double sharp. I forgot you were here. What are you doing, bro?
You told me to drink energy drinks, and all that means is nobody else talks. I'm going over here.
What's happening with the network, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I think Justin was just sort of mentioning it, which is it is sort of working the way it's supposed to work, which is that there's a limited throughput, so if there's profit to be made that's greater than whatever it costs you to pay for that transaction to go through, then a bot will do that or a person. But there was just a lot. I mean, there's a limited number of transactions that the network can handle. So whether it's a person, whether it's a bot, no matter what it is, when there's a lot of traffic, if you want your transaction to get processed more quickly, you pay more in gas. And if there's just a ton of people who are all willing to pay a lot in gas, then it's just going to take a while for things to go through as it gets processed. Like even with 1 second blocks and one block finality and all that, if you're just sitting in the mempool, that doesn't matter. There's still a number of transactions that can go in per block. So it's just periods of high volatility are going to have lots and lots of traffic. So
isn't it gas limit per block though? Not, or is it number of transactions?
I mean, there's a gas limit per transaction. There's a gas limit per block, and then there's just the like number of transactions that you can realistically process and keep in sync going through the EVM. And then you also have to have consensus across the network. If even with it being asynchronous, if parts of it are going way out of sync, like it's going to be hard to ever come back into like a generalized consensus state. So it's just periods of high traffic are gonna be slower because there's more usage. And so if you have people willing to pay more for gas, then they'll pay more for gas, and gas prices will be really high until the demand goes down. Or, and like, I mean, a lot of this is, it's just pricing models based on supply and demand. So if you have more supply of throughput on the network, then people won't find it necessary to pay that much in gas. So if there's a limited supply, people will pay more. So,
am I right to assume that like, so SnapSync, I guess, is one of the steps towards the FVM. And did that open up the gas per block a little bit? Do you know?
As far as I haven't actually looked at the code, but I think that might have something to do with the P2P networking. If it is more efficient P2P networking, then that would help everything keep in sync. SnapSync is mainly to help you start up a new validator and start up a new RPC server without having to wait days and weeks for the whole blockchain to sync. So you're able to, you know, snap sync just ahead of the chain and trust that it's legit, and then start processing from there instead of having to wait for it to sync from a certain point or from a snapshot or something like that.
Does it not have to do something to do with the ability to validate transactions without having the entire blockchain, like you just mentioned that, but also there's much less data space needing to be used? And so I seem to recall, now I could be totally wrong, but I seem to recall Kong saying this should speed up things on the validator side, not just in the ability to sync, but in the ability to process transactions and things like that.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. I haven't looked at it, but if it is like some of the P2P stuff where that's keeping the network in sync, the peer-to-peer networking stuff, then that would help it process transactions more quickly. If you're able to keep everything in sync, then you can allocate more gas per block or change, you know, sort of how some of that stuff works to allocate more supply so that the demand goes down some, thus gas prices going down.
Okay. So double sharp question. So like basically what you said about the nodes, I read that as well. It said basically like new nodes can join the network in 7 minutes as opposed to 24 hours. And then there was another comment in there that said the team's working on adapting new gas pricing model for the next major upgrade. Mm-hmm.
I think
can't expand on that. No idea, but like can you guys? So like, what does that mean to you?
So I was actually looking at some of the, I don't 100% know, but I'm assuming it has to do with some of the, you know, just pricing models. I know that with the London fork, enabling mm-hmm. that on the chain caused some issues with some dApps doing gas estimates. And so there were some changes to implement some of the other Ethereum calls for gas history and things like that to make it easier to implement those things. And then I'm guessing that with the Snap, I mean, this is, I'm speculating a little bit, but I do think there's probably going to be more gas allocated per block or you know, changing some of those settings around so that there can be more processing of transactions. Having you know, nodes be able to communicate more efficiently would be part of that. So I'm sort of speculating, but I think that is part of what the SnapSync is laying the foundation for.
I can confirm that you are correct, sir. It says the gas per second will be increased over time to increase network throughput without affecting transaction fees.
Let's go.
Well,
let's go.
Hopefully affecting transaction fees.
Bringing them down.
Yeah,
right.
Down. All right, moving on. There was a comment I just wanted to go back to. And I kind of want to be like, should we tell them? So 51% attack. No, that's generally a proof of work thing. But there can be a 33% attack on an ABFT, which is the voting power that you need to take over the network. Good news is probably not going to happen. You would definitely need to acquire significant amounts of Phantom, spin up validators, and stake it. Am I right? Double shot.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but like, to be fair, Luna just stopped their staking of validators because they're susceptible to this kind of attack.
Mm-hmm.
The price of Luna went down enough that it's affordable to take over the network. So mm-hmm. proof of stake works on the staked coins or whatever tokens, whatever they are. being hard enough to acquire that if you can't like acquire enough of them to take over the network to make it worthwhile. So proof of work, you're like, how are you going to spin up all these power plants and all these ASIC miners and stuff to do a 51% attack? With proof of stake, it's how do I acquire enough of the stake to, you know, have enough validators to be able to affect the processing of blocks. And so on Luna, they just decided that it's the price of the token is too low to secure the network. So they just halt, they're just going to trust the validators that they have and halt new validators from joining. So that is a possibility. If somebody decided that the value of the network was worth acquiring that much Phantom on the market to then stake validators to then, you know, have their own, like, you know, do stuff, that like that is a risk of proof of stake networks.
At the same time, the nice thing about that is if they were to try and acquire that level, now if they were doing it over a long period of time, maybe they could do it without a huge price impact, right. but they would likely have a huge price impact, thereby making it even more difficult for them to do what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I just saw like a couple tweets, so I don't know if this is correct, but with Luna, I think it's not specifically acquiring it on the open market now. It's that some people have acquired enough of it already that they could take over the network. So they're just going to stop new validators from happening. But so it is still that like a 51% attack is a risk on a proof of work network. Usually there, you can attack proof of stake networks in similar ways, and you'd run into similar roadblocks. Like you were saying, like if you're buying it on the open market, there's only so much available to buy. So the price is going to go up. So it becomes more and more expensive. But if the price is low enough and enough people don't want to buy the token, then, and like everybody's dumping it because of, you know, whatever stable coin, blah, 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 bad press, et cetera, then like it does that, like that's the risk with proof of stake is that the stake isn't enough to economically secure the network.
Hasn't it happened before on Phantom and there was consequences, like the Phantoms was just completely slashed?
There were two validators.
The two biggest
validators with voting power happened to go down at the same time. And according to Simone, the chain did not actually stop. It's just that block validation stopped. And so if you look at like a proof of work network, you know, you can go rent hash power. Like if you can get 51% of the hash power, you can go rent that shit. But if you're buying this Phantom that you may or may not be able to exit, you're taking a significant financial risk. And so the financial gain has to somehow outweigh that. Like what you want to do on the network has to outweigh that.
Well, that is a more efficient way of doing a 51% attack because you can, like you're saying, rent the hash power instead of actually buying it. So you don't need the full capital to like buy all the hardware and all the energy. You just need it for whatever period of time. Mm-hmm. And it is like proof of stake in some ways does help with that because it is like the open market. It's still like if someone were able to do that, then like that would be a risk. I haven't like dug into the code to see the specifics, but on most distributed proof of stake networks, the validating power is determined by the stake, the total stake allocated to that validator. So if the two largest validators went down that represent some very large percentage of the stake on the network, then they're regularly going to be checking with them to mint a block because they're more likely to be selected to do that. And I know that Phantom is leaderless and you know stuff like that. So I don't know how that works with the asynchronous nature, but presumably it was waiting for those confirmation from that, like much of the voting power on the network. And when it's not there, eventually it'll say, okay, well, we can move on without it. But it would just slow down a lot while it waits for consensus.
But and if this did happen, the Phantom that they staked or whatever would completely get slashed. From what I understand, it's very harsh consequences. Like they just completely lose.
No, if you're offline, if your validator is offline, you stop receiving rewards. If you double sign a transaction or like, so if you try and double spend or something like that, that's detected, that would slash the full stake of the network, the validator, the self stake and the delegated stake, which is, I think, something people take lightly and don't understand. Like they pick validators based on whichever one is, you know, staked the longest or has a big enough stake. or has like a very large self stake or something. That just means the person staking it is risking, you know, is risking their stake along with everybody else's. But at some point, if the idea is that that risking that amount of money isn't worth it to somebody to try and double spend on the network and get away with it. Because if you do try and do that and you get caught, then you can lose all of the money that you've self-staked into a validator along with all of the delegator stakes. And then they would be mad at you and come after you. And that's the, another way of securing a proof of stake network from the validators being bad actors is using those penalties of slashing your stake to make it not worth it, basically. But that is a risk when you delegate to a validator. If they are a bad actor, you can have all of the funds that you've staked and rewards and all of that slashed.
Well, and you've brought up a great point there, in that, like, this is why liquid staking and the FUSD initiative are so important, because what they're going to do is they're going to give people liquidity, thereby encouraging them to stake, thereby raising the amount staked, thereby making it more difficult to acquire 33% of the voting power on the network. Mm-hmm. Higher phantom price also secures the network. So this is why, like, these types of initiatives are super, super important. Just wanted to point that out. Sorry to cut you off.
It's real, like a balancing act of lots of different factors that all sort of come together to make it work. Because there are like different incentives for different actors to be, you know, good actors and bad actors. And a lot of the rules that you see are basically to help enforce that. So a validator is, you know, incentivized to be a good actor. Users are incentivized to, you know, help do that by finding a validator that they think is going to be a good actor. So in some ways, like, the system is designed to, you know, want people to validate towards a validator that maybe is doxed, or maybe is just really trustworthy, or maybe is run by an organization or a team that people trust. Because part of it is, like, when you're delegating your phantom, part of what you are doing is trusting that validator is going to be a good operator and not try and do something malicious. You're also delegating your governance voting power to them to some extent. You know, you're also maybe wanting to pick someone who's operating a validator that aligns with how you want your governance votes to count, if you're not doing that yourself. And so it's, you know, it's using economic theory to balance incentives across different actors in the whole model. And that's sort of where a lot of this stuff comes from. But yeah, so like you can lose your whole stake. You could stop receiving rewards. Network can get slow. There's governance stuff that comes into play. All that stuff sort of ties together.
And I know Lafayette is spinning up a considerable amount of validator nodes right now. 20, mm-hmm. 25, I don't remember the number, maybe 50. It was a significant number that they're about to spin up to help, you know. I worry about using the word decentralize the network, because you know, we get more nodes out of it, but, you know, they pretty much all live on AWS. So, like,
well,
you know.
And also, I mean, if there's like 50-ish nodes or 60 nodes now, if Deus is now running 50 of them, half of the network is being run by, regardless of what network or what host they put them on, it's like one person running all those validators. They still wouldn't be able to control, like, Deus doesn't control the network with 50% of the validators. They would still need, you know, 33% of the stake or whatever to right. do that. But that is, you know, that is a thing that's, it decentralizes it from a, like, a networking perspective, but it's not a decentralization or deconcentration of assets necessarily.
Gotcha. Clay, did you have something to say before I so rudely cut you off?
I mean, I was just going to say, like, why, like, you know, in this mechanism of proof of stake, like, why is there no penalty for not voting? Like, how is that not written into some kind of bylaw when you have when you're an operator, that you have to vote on everything that comes through? And if you don't, you get penalized. I mean, there's really no answer to that. It's somewhat rhetorical, but, like,
interesting.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Or incentives for voting. You can do it either way.
Sure. Instead of slapping the wrist, we'll reward you.
It sounded like that's kind of what the plan was to work on when we chatted with Lafayette the other day. So since everyone is just, like, so into talking about pegging today, we should talk about it again. And that, now I want to preface this by saying, like I said earlier, I actually really like Harry. I think as a, you know, I think he's a pretty cool guy. He's done a lot for the network. I'm not a Tomb fan personally. And you know, the bigger Tomb has gotten, the more concerned I've obviously been about it. And, you know, we saw something happen yesterday and that Tomb lost its peg. But now if that had happened to the degree it happened yesterday, during normal market conditions, it would have made all the news. But to be honest, what happened was it didn't make as much news except to the people that are in Tomb. And that's, you know, I see that as kind of a good thing. I do think, I mean, I Harry's pretty tenacious dude. Like, you don't get to get that much money without, like, you know, having some stick-to-itiveness. And I know that Felix was built, you know, with the intention of using Tomb pairs. And so who knows if it'll recover? I don't know. Do you guys have opinions? I'm not in it. So.
A ton of opinions. First of all, you guys saw this, right? I printed this out for prosperity. This is I put this on my wall. I put this on my wall before I go to sleep every night. I pray
to Harry before you go to sleep.
But man, okay, you're completely right. Had it not been for UST, even Phantom as a whole, like, I don't know if you guys know this. Over the last week, we're the largest loser in terms of market cap. Second largest or third largest, because UST and Luna, right? So third largest. They took off Luna off CMC, so it confused me there for a second. So yeah, we definitely got overshadowed by other things in the market. But man, that fall was pretty large. Like, Tomb has lost peg many times before. That's what it's designed to do, but not quite this way. Like, it's at 0.2, I believe, right now.
77% off.
And it's 8 cents currently. It's not looking good. And somebody had a tweet earlier today, tagged all of us, and was asking how this affects the ecosystem. It really doesn't. But had the Tomb pairs come into effect and there had been large liquidity on Felix, it would have been disastrous. Like, we all talk about the systemic risk of Tomb, and we talk about how, you know, it is a Ponzi, it's money generating, but, you know, everyone's had faith in the cat of the crypto alley, Harry Yeh, but he hasn't quite been as a great, you know, I don't know, I won't say trader, but like, you see him leveraging his Tomb on Mai, which has been beyond liquidation price because there's no liquidity for Mai as well. So it just, I don't know. It smells like, why would anyone want to touch this with a 10-foot pole? We've been saying the same thing since last October. And people got hurt bad by this, like, significantly. I know Tweak's big into Tomb. I know a lot of people are on Twitter. They got their family to invest, their sisters, their mothers. And it's not quite the vehicle for financial salvation as people thought. It's another basis cast. It's another Luna without an L1. Maybe I'm going a little too hard on Tomb right now, but it does not feel safe. The peg, how do you defend that peg from 0.25? Like, that there's a lot of money.
Can we get into that a little bit? Like, can we actually talk about
tiptoe a little bit here? I'm just saying.
All right.
Go in, guys. Go in. I just went ham. I went
no,
ham.
I mean,
you went crypto ham over here.
I just think that. Go ahead, Beavis.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. What you're saying is going to be way goosier.
You go. Like, look, go like, ahead, it's like, if we look at this systematically, Tomb, 75% off peg. When Tomb is under peg to Phantom, the supply contracts, and you basically have to sell T bonds for Tomb. So, how much, you know, out in the ecosystem, how much, you know, like, how many people want to buy T-bonds all the way back up to peg? I don't know how it happens previously, but that's what needs to happen. So I don't know how many billions of dollars that would cost to move Toom far enough to be back in peg at 30 cents or whatever.
It wouldn't take billions, but the thing that everyone like here's the wild card with these seniorage things and why some of them can last for a little while before crashing and some of them go away right away is the community has to be willing to play the game with you. And you know, the reason the Toom community had been willing to play the game is because Harry had time and again shown that he was kind of the backstop. And I think people were really banking on that. And at some point, that's not going to be like a fun place to be, you know. And I know that like I've read his updates, and I can tell that like the dude genuinely cares and like wants that to be a success. Although I think the issue with something with that much potential risk and the assumption everyone has that it's going to stay at peg is you're never going to hit that place of, okay, now I can relax, everything's okay, because greater market forces like we saw yesterday will always cause damage to, you know, something that's pegged algorithmically or, man, I can't talk today, or there's a DAO arbing it from top to bottom. And if sentiment is shaken, then the bonding system especially will not work. Like I spoke to, who was that Project Clay that we chatted with that was like doing a payment processor on Phantom? Shit, I can't remember the name. I think it was Sendlify or Sendlity. I can't remember the name. Super, super nice guy. And he's like, well, here's our token that we're going to be, this is what you send and you can redeem it for dollars. I'm like, okay, cool. And he's like, it's an algo stable. And I'm like, what part of the algo are you using exactly? And he's like, well, the bonding mechanism. I'm like, I'm sorry, man, we can't go any further with this phone call. Like, we're done. Because the bonding 100% is reliant upon people willing to play your game. And if the game is not winnable, or, you know, because if you buy those bonds, I mean, as far as I know, they don't have any utility except to be redeemed above peg. And so
back to Toom.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I want to hear Beavis's thoughts on this because I'm interested, but I do want to get into the tokenomics of being under or over peg and then how that ties back to Phantom, because I think it's time to talk about it.
I don't know that it does that much, but maybe.
I mean, we can get into that. I personally like, I'm not really a big Toom hater, to be honest. I think that everybody has been talking about for the past couple months, oh, we're going to make Toom Chain. We're going to do all this stuff. We're not going to care about the peg anymore, to the moon. But cool. I think to a certain extent, that includes to the downside. I think it's getting to a point where probably even Ye has realized, like, there's no safe way for this thing to contract. So even giving a fuck about the peg is problematic. And I would say, like, you know, if he's willing to build an L2, if he's willing to build out all this support for Toom, if he's willing to just make Toom Harry Ye coin, you know, he has enough of it. I think, like, there's not really much stopping him. And I guess, like, you know, the market is stopping him potentially or whatever. But if he has the cash to do it, I would say, you know, that's a guy that I am probably willing to support, in that he has, like, been boots on the ground doing this shit, you know, maybe not in the way I would do it, you know, maybe not in like an industry leading type fashion, but he is learning over time and he is getting better over time, at kind of managing these DeFi economics. And I would say if he's willing to take Phantom on his back, and take us, you know, onto Toom Chain beyond, start getting some crazy stuff going, like, hell, dude, do it. You know, I would be excited about that. It's just like, it is complex and difficult what he's trying to do. I don't care about the peg. You know, I don't care about whatever economics play into this. I think definitely, like, Toom was levering up a lot of FTM, especially with the yield. And now that the yield is dropping way down, we're going to see Phantom dump some. And that's, I think, the systemic risk is so much of the yield on Phantom. Like, was dependent on Tomb, and it's the reason a lot of people levered into Phantom is it was to farm Tomb and to get that 100 to 300% yield on what's essentially like a stable pool. And Hiraye like supported that. And honestly, like at this point, I hope he has banked enough cash profits to keep the train rolling and to keep building and doing his thing, because we all knew the peg would blow up. We all knew like the yields would go to nothing. We all knew this was an eventuality. And, you know, Harry isn't building in a way that is dependent on the peg. He's building on a way that makes the Tomb price go up, which, you know, is kind of how you need to do this thing. And I think at this point, like, you know, it's better to say, you know, F the peg when it's way up. But when it's way down, I think, you know, just, you know, say F the peg, and it's Tomb coin, you know, it's backed by the number one VC group on Phantom. And I doubt they're going to just drop it. And Tomb Chain apparently is in test right now. You know, I think they're doing optimistic rollups, which is really dope on top of Phantom. You know, he still obviously has a really good rapport with Phantom. He's still obviously providing a lot of support and funding in the background. So, you know, I say I'm not a Tomb guy, you know, I don't invest in much. But you know, he's doing stuff, and to me that's what matters, and he has runway, to Austin's earlier point. It's like, you know, if anything's going to make it through the next couple years, it's going to be Tomb. And that's
if he came out and he said, okay, we're not going to worry about being pegged. This is just going to be a volatile asset now that will move with the market. It can go way past, you know, the price of one Phantom. Let the market decide what it's worth. I might even buy Tomb if he came out and said, this is what we're going to do. We're no longer going to rely on a peg, because the ecosystem that he's building is significant. And I know that he has put a significant investment towards wanting to build on the Phantom chain. I know how close he is with the Cheetah guys, which kind of leads into our next topic here in a second. But I mean, I would support that. Like, if that peg was removed, because that's been my number one complaint about Tomb, and the reason I just didn't want to buy it was that I saw a lot of new people. I get a lot of DMs from people, and they're basically saying, "Well, this is pegged, but it's a soft peg." You know, new people are coming in. You know, to your point, whoever had mentioned that, and they were putting money in with the belief that this is absolutely going to stay right where it is. And nobody was really correcting that belief, because that's kind of the belief that you need to have to get the community to play ball on the bonding and things like that. So it's kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy and that's really where I was getting the bad taste on it. So if that went away, if there was like, all right, we're just not worried about pegging this sucker anymore. Let the market do what the market's going to do. We're going to create Tomb Chain. We're going to do our, you know, what's the Tornado Cash fork? Why can't I remember it? I wanted to call it Shadow Cash. You know, we're going to do shit like that. We're going to build the L2, man. Rock and roll, dude. Like, that would be amazing. I would see that as being something freaking amazing.
They do need a peg, though. They need, like, a floor price, because if they didn't and they were printing, like, let's say the printer was on, the masonry, it would actually go to zero.
Well, they'd have to get rid of the printer.
Get rid of the printer. But then what happens?
The tough part is
how
you consolidate T-shares and Tomb. That's right. Like the tough part.
They would have to figure out a utility for T-shares. I mean,
I've talked about two token systems before. Two token systems are just like bullshit, and I think like some really really hard decisions need to be made about the economics of Tomb. But when you're willing to dump money into it, it just, you know. It is what it is, and he just needs to make like some sociopathic decisions.
Vinny Knickers, I don't think Waka ever held very much TVL on Reaper. Waka didn't hold much TVL ever. Maybe for like a minute, but if there's a rumor going around that Beavis told people not to sell Waka because of how much TVL it held on Reaper.
I held a ton of Waka. I mean, honestly, it's probably because I was a bag holder, you know. I was like, oh, dude, 8 devs. This is going to be awesome. Like, I told our 2 co-founders, I was like, dude, they have the devs. They're working on something. And unfortunately, then we worked with them once, and we realized that it was, like, all kind of...
Are we allowed to talk fully about Waka? From what I've heard, the rumor is I'm not sure if it was Stater or Anchor, but it was their interns that created Waka. That's why Harry was so bullish on it. Am I allowed to say that?
I had video calls with the Waka team. And so I think the guys were well-intentioned. I don't know if they were Anchor interns. They may have been. I really didn't get that feeling. But I do know they were outsourcing their dev work. And that is where they ran into issues, is they were completely reliant upon a remote team that was not there to pull it off. And so
I honestly saw the yay stamp of approval and I was like, shit, bro, this is undervalued. But
same back when that stamp was worth a ton, guys, that stamp of approval back then.
I mean, it still is, dude. It still is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's like this has nothing to like. Yours, like, we really need to decouple the person from the project. Like, these two things are not even intertwined in any way, shape, or form. Like, what I'm talking about has nothing to do with anything like that. I'm saying from a basic tokenomics perspective, if Tomb is under peg, let's say it's under peg 20%, you can sell 4 Phantom for 5 Tomb, swap it for 5 T-bonds, and then redeem 5 Tomb. Once it's repegged, right? So you picked up 1 tomb, and they're supposed to be pegged. So you picked up an additional tomb that didn't exist as like a Phantom token. So now you have 1 more token than you originally did Phantom, right? Let's go the other way. If it's overpeg and there's Phantoms at $2, tombs at $2.50, then that basically equates to a 1.25 Phantom price. T-share starts printing. The 25% peg comes down. You get paid in tomb, and so you end up with 5 tomb. Against the 4 Phantom that you originally, you know, where the peg was. So I guess my point is you always end up with 1 more tomb. If you look at the way they say to enter and exit the market, to sell tomb, go to tomb, my, into Phantom. What do you do then? You probably sell that Phantom into something else. You sell, you know, it goes somewhere. And to go buy tomb, you go my, Phantom, into tomb. So if you're ending up with 1 more tomb every single time, whether under or over pegged, and you use Phantom as the vehicle to get in or out, like, is that not sell pressure on both directions?
I don't see it as any more sell pressure as selling your boo rewards or your spirit rewards, or it just kind of is what it is. I never really saw the parasitic article that they were talking about.
Right.
What I saw as the biggest threat was the belief from, you know, ignorant new people that this was pegged and it was never going to break. And USDT is going to be fine, Caleb. It's back to 0.9984. We've had Tether FUD since the beginning of time.
That was dumb as hell. We have that as a topic, right?
No, but we can talk about
we'll
it.
We'll do like quick chat on that. Somebody sold like $500 million on Binance directly when there's a site to redeem and mint it. So that was a little ridiculous. And then I think people that bought the bottom of it made millions, right? It was maybe FUD to make some money. I'm not sure where that came from. It's not yet. USDT is not USDT is not UST. It's not an algo steal. There's actual real collateral. I was shocked that I even like did.
Someone lost $390 million. That's the crazy thing. That's why I broke out my ledger last night, dude. The Curve 3 pool, there was like 1.8 billion Tether and then like 150 million USDC in DAI. That to me was like scary as fuck.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, shit the bed moment.
So what did you do? Did you buy Tether?
No, I just withdrew my LP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. this next topic is important. And I think it's important for everyone to know that, yes, a big part of the drop in price on Phantom was due to market conditions and sell pressure directly. But this was extremely aggravated by liquidations happening on chain. There are a couple significant players. We talked about one of them already, who had, you know, they had put up their Phantom as collateral. and Tomb, I think, was one of the collaterals as well. And when the price dropped, you know, liquidation started. And what happens in a liquidation is people go and they pay off your loan, they take your collateral, sell it on market, and they keep a fee. And so this is just, it was just a rapid dumping of the Phantom token, which really exacerbated the drop. But the good news is, can anyone confirm, like, that's, we're done, right? Like, are we done with that? Unless they lever back up, which might happen, but.
Let me check the wallets, but I think most of Harry's positions were liquidated, but Harry's positions were mostly Tomb leveraged ones where he borrowed against Tomb. Roosh has been really healthy. He unstaked his FTM because it was a 7-day period where he had to wait. That's why he couldn't really pay it back. But his stuff looks healthy. In terms of Harry, like, the damage has already been done on Tomb. And he did have like a small rat phantom loan. Can we talk about one thing? There's just a phenomenon. I know Alex mentioned it, where I think it's the market lending service. Like, there's no liquidity for Mai, so it's hard to liquidate some of the positions that Harry had. Like, he had dropped down to 0.6 health ratio or something. And that's when the liquidation was triggered rather than like under one. Does anyone know anything about that, or is that just like rumors?
I'm checking Curve right now. I mean, how much Mai is there? Let's
see. It's an interesting topic, just because
there's 34 million in the Curve pool, which is Mai, FUSDT, and USDC. I would imagine there is a good chunk of Mai liquidity. It might be spread around though. I know there's probably 10 or 20 million over on Beethoven, right?
Yeah. Okay, so there's enough. He got liquidated, so clearly there was enough, but it went really, really low. Oh, it waits for gas for liquidation. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. We should address Person Gaming's comments over here because they're just great.
They are great. I love
them. He says, should we ban platforms like Screamgeist and Granary? Well, A, we don't have, nobody has the ability to ban. Banning is not what occurs in this sort of environment. And lending is a very, very important part of the DeFi ecosystem. I mean, it is such a core service that is provided. We want these platforms. Like, liquidations are a part of it, but we really want these platforms on chain. This is an unfortunate side effect of what I believe is certain individuals holding too much of the supply and not unscrupulous fashion, but what's the word I'm looking for? Shit. Now I can't.
Centralized?
No. Irresponsibly putting them up for collateral in a way that, if liquidated, would definitely have effects over the chain. Has nothing to do with the platforms. It's like saying, should we ban McDonald's because heart disease is running rampant? Well, you know, quit eating it, you fat ass, and you'd probably be okay. You know, like, it really is not, you know, don't hate the player, not the game, I guess, in this particular instance, is what I'm
trying
to say.
It does make our markets more efficient, but efficient markets result in like fucking 1 week minus 90% hell dump. But they also help us with the, you know, 1 week plus 500% heaven rise, you know. It's just
it feels gross. Like, you can't have an economy without a lending market. I mean, if businesses couldn't borrow, lend, do anything. If a homeowner couldn't take a loan, you couldn't buy a house. So it's the same, you know.
Exactly.
That's how you fuel growth.
Some good news, though. More Phantom in circulation. That's completely great.
Yeah, it's not as centralized, I suppose. You know, this next question or this next topic is a great one. And Clay, I'm going to let you kick this one off. I'm so sorry for covering your face, Beavis. How can Phantom create new demand drivers outside of DeFi? How can Phantom market position itself better to devs and app builders? What are other chains doing to market themselves? God, there's so many questions in this one. What damage has Luna's situation caused to L1s? How can Phantom compete? I feel like we should have streamlined that slightly. Yeah, there was one thing. The only thing I want to say on this is Clay and I were chatting the other day.
and we saw the tweet that Polygon partnered up with Facebook, and there were many, many F words exchanged between us because it was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, really? Like, Polygon? Because it's not about, do you have the best tech at that point? It's who's got the gift of gab and who kicked their way through the door to be able to convince them this was the right move. And Instagram adding NFTs for Solana and who else was it? Polygon and AVAX?
AVAX. No, it wasn't AVAX. It was Ethereum, Polygon, Matic, and Near, one of the two. A pretty obscure one.
Anyhow, kick it away, Clay. I got to go drive some liquid. I'll be right back.
I was actually going to say someone else take it for the same reason, but I mean, guys, go for it, Beavis. I will be right back.
All right. OP. We'll hit the comments here. Person Gaming with more beautiful comments. I agree. Developers need grants. But the nice thing is, you know, we were all mad that it was on Gitcoin because Gitcoin is only doing it on ETH. But now, since ETH is going to be like $1, you know, it'll be cheap to transact again, and we can all head over there and vote on Gitcoin, which is dope. Yeah.
In terms of the last topic, though, have you guys checked out the DeFi Llama NFT like kind of dashboard? I don't think Polygon even has much volume in terms of NFTs. Like, you'd be surprised about PaintSwap. PaintSwap's one of the higher ones. So there's a vibrant NFT community here, but there needs to be a face doing the business-to-business sort of, like, marketing or creating relationships like that, because that kind of sucks, though. Like, how does Polygon, which has, like, three collections – okay, obviously I'm talking smack get that sort of, I guess, partnership. What do you think, Double?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I actually am not really sure how to comment on that at the moment. It seemed like it's hard to tell for me, like, what the market for any of that stuff is doing relative to, you know, all the other stuff going on. So, I've been sort of paying attention to, like the DeFi Llama stuff, just more like from a development standpoint, because they keep making all this new stuff. So I have been seeing. I was sort of surprised to see where the NFT traffic wasn't exactly where I expected it to be. But like, I don't really know what happens with a lot of that stuff right now.
Yeah, well, most of the volume is on Ethereum. Maybe I think DeFi Kingdoms is in the top. I think there's Legion Genesis from Magic that would be on Arbitrum. And surprisingly, like, one of the next ones would be the Uman collections as a whole. Yeah. And we have so much like grassroots good NFT like movements here on Phantom, but it seems like other networks support that a little bit more. But I feel like there's so many things that could kind of be worked on as a whole, and I feel like now we have the opportunity with DAO markets to kind of just build on Phantom in general. So I think it's Riot. I'm not gonna say Ghouls. Riot Girls, I assume that is doing well.
Ghouls is Ghouls, isn't it?
Hey, Riot Ghoul. Hey, all these ghouls over here.
All right. So, but did we get any answers here as to what we can do? Demand drivers, market position. We had 80 questions. That's why we can't figure out.
I was busy trying to fuck elevate. Needs. Sorry.
Yeah. How can we compete? Why with our tech are we not the ones in the door? I think the reason we're not in the door is we don't have the focus on business development that other chains have, and that's just it.
This is a beautiful time. Sorry, go ahead, Double Sharp.
I was just gonna say, like, business development. I think a lot of that is just like incentives, incentivizing different things to be on the network. Like, I think I mentioned this before, but like, you know, I know I'm friends with some people who, like, Polygon gave them money to develop an NFT marketplace for Polygon. Like, that's that's basically just Polygon saying that they want to make sure that there's an NFT marketplace on their network and like incentivizing somebody to do that with them or for them. I don't know the like details of their arrangement, but I mean, that's, I think that this was like a topic that we talked about before, but it does just sort of come down to like, what are you incentivizing on the network and like, what do you want its thing to be? And so, you know, for the last several months, a lot of the push has been towards DeFi protocols and incentivizing TVL and things like that. And so I do think that's where you've seen a lot of the like, you know, push on Phantom was towards that side of things as opposed to other stuff, just because that's where a lot of the incentives were aligned.
So OpenSea is on Polygon though. So, yeah. You know, maybe Rob, that's why they didn't have a native one.
It's really crap. Rob is saying that OpenSea on Polygon is really bad. I've never used OpenSea on Polygon, but I can definitely see that being reality. OpenSea for some reason like makes really bad technical decisions. And maybe they're just like really like wound up in business development or whatever, but OpenSea kind of like they develop like, you know, like Waka, you know? It's like
let's decouple the, if you have a amazing GameFi project, you're going to win the race, because I don't know if you guys have seen DeFi Kingdom's token price lately, but it's not so good. And with that went the TVL that came with DeFi Kingdoms. And I, you know, I wish them the best, and I hope, obviously we met them in Miami. They're great dudes and I hope they're great people. There's obviously both sides of the equation there, but you know, I hope that they succeed, but that's not the silver bullet to long-term success. And it's not the growth path to long-term success. And frankly, you know, I don't, there's 236 people here. We probably get like 5,000 viewers in an episode. I think there's, I don't know what, 310 million Americans, probably more. That's not a lot of scale. So there's a lot of people sitting on the couch that are never going to go to Beethoven and swap or go to any of our DeFi protocols and swap. But there are a million people that are going to go to Facebook, are going to go to Instagram, billions of people actually. And so, you know, I think that there's kind of some beauty in this havoc, this wreckage that we're going through right now, which is a lot of the clutter is going to get moved aside. So things that we think are shiny objects that are, you know, the real success factors are not going to be the success factors because they're not going to scale the way that we thought they would originally because the market is terrible. But like I go back to what you said originally, Austin, which is enterprise partnerships and things that are publicly so notable that people at their kitchen table are talking about, hey, you know, I don't really know much about NFTs, but I saw you can get one on Phantom and you can, you know, integrate it into your Instagram. You know, I don't know what their integration is going to be with Instagram, but like things like that is how you reach millions of people on a consumer to consumer basis. And I think that the foundation has an opportunity right now with things in a lull to take a step back and say, you know, why weren't we in the room in these conversations? Because I'm sure they could have been at the table. And part of the sort of the selling point of why they chose Polygon, from what I read, was that it was carbon neutral. And I'm pretty sure we have a pretty similar, very low carbon footprint as proof of stake on Phantom. I've seen that be touted on the website. So, I mean, like we have all the same hit points that other folks have. I just don't think that we have the focus on that level of development. And like, you got to get in the room and just have the conversations with the right folks. I mean, it deserves a team. And that's probably not the only opportunity that'll come into that regard. So if you're not out having those high level conversations with major other partners and successful companies, and we're kind of at the whim of let's hope we succeed based on the products that we build. And I don't know.
Well, so, I mean, Polygon got Facebook, Polygon and Near, I think, and Solana got Instagram, which basically leaves us OnlyFans. If we could like get our NFTs on OnlyFans, I think we would get like that really classy section of OnlyFans that we definitely want to join our ecosystem.
I thought that was a Phantom thing for a minute.
Just yours, and then but you know that crashed. The founder like sold all of his tokens because he said Harry was building a competing product. That was like a real shit show, to be perfectly honest. Hey, Person Gaming has put this question up like four times.
We can't. I don't know if it's worth investing in literally anything except USDC right now. Anything, exactly. And maybe not even that. I don't know. Inflation is like crazy.
I think it's just like that at this point is a very personal decision. And I mean, you know, it's easy to say like when it's up high, like shill USDC or whatever. But right now, even I'm having trouble shilling USDC because I don't know what the fuck to do. So it's like you just have to like, you know, do research and, you know, breathe in heavily and have kind of high conviction. Because right now, I think like people are afraid to move in with stable coins. People are afraid to sell their assets at these lows. Everybody's like afraid to do anything. And really it just takes like a few big players to stop being afraid, for things to start moving again. And, you know, that's kind of why I try to like be really positive about Tomb and about Harry, is because like, you know, these are the guys that can kind of get stuff kickstarted, on the network. And, you know, for all Tomb's faults, which I've detailed elaborately, in the past several months, or you know, anything like that. At the end of the day, like, it does get people interested in crypto. It levers people into crypto for better or worse. So yeah, that's I've been asking myself that same question, Person Gaming, whether or not, like, you know, even for like token launches, like for example the Granary, like when are we supposed to launch? Like, we have all this software, when the hell are we supposed to launch it? You know, it's been like who knows for 2 months now. And it's just like, it keeps going down. It's like, scary, but, I think it's just, you know, once that fear subsides or starts subsiding for people. And by the way, Maren Altman has freaking
killing it.
Dude, she's crushing it.
We
got to get the Red Witch on here. We got to bring her
probably
on,
five figures right now per hour, at least. Like, dude, she's the only person that has been right. Like, well, probably not, but she's the only person that's been like the only normal
Mercury in retrograde.
What the hell is
right,
star
right? Isn't that what it is,
dude? No, but it's she in January she said May 10th and October. I want to say 26th.
But those are both Mercury in retrograde, Austin.
Yeah, but it has to do with Venus into Aries Pisces. Some shit like this.
Dude, no, Mercury's in retrograde, bro. People be acting wild when
Mercury's in retrograde.
But that's not the reason she called those. They're just not. And she explained.
Yeah, it is.
It happened because she said it would.
No, Mercury. No. She explained Mercury in retrograde. It's just a time when things change.
Oh, okay.
It's not a time that's
we thought Austin was down here and we were right here, but in reality, Austin is way up here.
Like, I've watched the video. I understand what she was talking about. It's not that. It's some other shit. I'm telling you. Right. I don't know
never
what
did
shit.
I expect. All right,
all right, all right. I want to get into Austin is like in deep on the.
We're
on
so off topic, man.
Stars and internet tokens.
Yeah,
I've never
quickly though, Austin. I want to go back to the one more point on the topic of what can we do differently. We named a whole bunch of apps, including what did you say? OnlyFans, and maybe the porn route isn't the right one, but one that we didn't name.
We can get at this point, bro. I'm sorry. Keep going.
One that we didn't name that's probably the largest of any of them, or soon to be the largest of any of them, is TikTok. And if you could get integrated NFT marketplace into TikTok and actually have, you know, think how many videos or like how much stuff goes viral, meme coins from TikTok. Like, if you could have World of Humans and then an explainer of the whole thing and all of it's integrated into, like, there's just so many possibilities and stones that could be unturned. And that's a major one that hasn't been touched. So,
dude,
I mean,
if
I think
we can get the same marketing,
that's like a
company
$1 billion integration
that the
TikTok,
U.S. government
that's
uses,
like a 10-figure contract. That would be like the most insane shit ever.
Yeah,
we need to make these partnerships when Phantom is $3, so that we have like, you know, hey, TikTok CEOs, let's have a 10-year agreement. Here's $1 billion. Thank you.
I'm not even sure you have to pay them. Honestly, I think that they want stuff like that. Like, that's part of the, you know, cutting edge progressiveness of what these apps are all about.
J Polar 91, do you remember Verge Coin?
Do you remember they needed $1 million and they were going to get this huge integration and it was a big freaking deal? And it turns out all they did was just another integration into Pornhub, and like, and then nobody continued to give a shit, but the jokes got a lot better. Like, that's all that it was. So who the hell knows? Hey, you know what I do want to talk about? Because Clay spent a lot of time digging into this morning. Tell me about Deus V3. What's going on there, Clay?
Yeah. So, I mean, I tweeted out earlier today, if you haven't listened to the latest 45 minutes of Lafa explaining Deus and their future plans, I would highly recommend you go do it. I'm so impressed by the guy and so encouraged by the fact that, you know, he and other builders on the network could take on FUSD. I think it's pretty amazing. But basically, what he said in the, you know, throughout the thing was that they've created a new AMM. So like he's so heavy, it seems that they're super heavily focused on like doing Luna, but in the right way, and creating a stablecoin market that is next level between FUSD and DAI. And so they've created a new AMM that has some type of new rebalancing price mechanics at all times. That's going to like revolutionize AMMs, as he said it. He said change the stable game forever was the direct quote. But he went on to say that, and I don't know what this means, but he went on to say, give like some tidbits about implementing lending and borrowing into this new AMM. And I'm not aware of them having anything like that, but basically saying that there's, you know, something to do with lending and borrowing coming into the AMM, where you can lend USDC to rebuy DAI cheaply, and create this flywheel effect of kind of keeping it on peg through a lending and borrowing mechanism. They're creating a bonding system for Deus as a whole, which it sounded to me a lot like what Olympus DAO does, but I don't think anybody can argue with protocol and liquidity at this point. Definitely valuable. And if it comes to Phantom and is native to Phantom, I think that's huge. So, I mean, those are the major updates, but you really should listen to the whole thing. It's super impressive what they're building. Oh shit, my bad. One more. He's got a guy that came from Wall Street that contacted Deus for something called Fix API, which I didn't no idea what that is or was. But basically, it reads messages on chain and then transfers to the broker the necessary information for the on-chain synthetic stocks. So they're building out this new product, I guess Fix API, where Muon, the hedger, and the broker all get information relayed in real time for these synthetic builds that they're doing. Muon handles the no fraud element, and basically like 2 to 4K of you can, and within it you can trade 2 to 4K of stocks or bonds with leverage. And so that's some pretty next level stuff. No idea, can't pretend like I have any clue, but that was like, whoa. So definitely encourage you to go listen to it.
So the creative shit like this, though, I mean, regardless, I love seeing people get creative in this way. Like, I was just kind of going, you know, I had never dug into Luna just because I didn't have the bandwidth to, but with everything going on, I kind of wanted to see like, all right, what ecosystem did they have under the hood? And I was checking out like fractional real estate and NFTs and all this different shit that they had built on their network. And I was like, oh, it was such a shame to see it go down with all these people that have put so much time into building on it. But I'll say it again, the builders are the network. The builders are the network. You can't, I like, that's what drove me so insane when I heard some people saying, well, they're just forks. Like, we'll just refork it. Well, you fucking won't, though. Like, if you think you're going to anonymously refork something where we have giant communities already in place, you ain't going to fork that. And so these builders are like essential. And, you know, especially where we're at right now, like in this, and right today, the builders are, you know, some of them have runway. Like, I know Spirit has a good chunk of runway. I don't know necessarily the runway of the other projects, but I will tell you that the builders are like, they're, if they use this time properly, they're going to be head down and focused, ready for the next time price goes up. And then I think what you're also going to see for the ones that don't have runway, you're probably going to see the ones that planned well making some acquisitions. I think you're going to see the ones that are flush buying out the ones that aren't. And that's good. It's a consolidation. It's, you know, it's just kind of bringing more under one hood. So we do have one more topic, which is
Beethoven and Tarot both launching on Optimism. Now, Tarot launched on Optimism. Beethoven, not yet. They're doing the balancer fork over there. They're doing the planning, right? And is the future multi-chain? And you know, I never had really paid a ton of thought to, like, Phantom projects going multi-chain, because it was always just, like, Phantom first, and all this. But I kind of see them going multi-chain as, well, twofold. One, there's going to be incentives over there, which may or may not exist over here. But it's kind of like a risk diversification strategy in that, like, you're not completely dependent on one chain and that chain's tokens price, if that makes sense. And so I hope, like, Justin, are you guys planning to go, you guys going to go spread your, sow your royal oaths all over the place? Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, like, rug our marketing department, but,
okay.
We're production testing on another chain right now. And then, it's very likely that, we'll be following Beethoven, and Tarot to Optimism, as well. So we can leverage a lot of our strategies on there. But yeah, I mean, it is like kind of the inevitable, spread right now. Kind of the huge problem from a protocol standpoint is, like, retail is increasingly disinterested and scared. So, like, developments that cater to retail, are profitable in that they are leverage you can take, to a foundation and say, hey, we're building here. Can we, like, you know, get a grant or XYZ? So we've had to kind of, like, you know, now that it's like, okay, we're a yield aggregator, we're an abstraction, we're focused on retail and getting retail onboarded. Now, like, the questions we're asking and the problems we're solving are a lot different than they were, like, 3, 4, 5 months ago. So yeah, we definitely will be following, Beethoven, and we're on another network at the moment doing, live production testing. But yeah, it's just like diversifying income streams and diversifying exposure to different networks, right now, I think is, like, really important, less so for the usership and the TVL, more so for the business development aspects of it. Because right now it's like people talk about this person or that person or whatever being, like, kingmakers, but the real kingmaker is, like, the bear market. And if we can, like, thrive during this down period where everybody is in hell, you know, when we get to the other side, you know, hopefully we'll be a brand name, maybe indefinitely, because a lot of competitors will drop in the process. You know, and we've already, you know, identified, like, you know, we brought on Granary and some stuff like that. And we're talking about acquisitions, and, you know, runway is something that's, like, really big on our mind, mostly because, like, all we want is cash runway because we hate selling assets at this price. But, you know, our treasury is about 9 million right now. And, you know, we're just thinking about, like, if this extends 3 years, 2 years, or if this extends to the next halving, how can we make sure that we remain flush enough to actually remain nimble and maintain kind of a big, beefy team? So it's like, you know, there are a lot of questions and there's a lot of repositioning going on right now for every team. And there is, like, a lot of fear in the air. And right now it's, like, the time to pull yourself out of, you know, one track mindedness, because, like, again, like, all that we're going to be doing now is laying the groundwork for when things kind of go back up, if you know what I mean. And yeah, I mean, our software is, like, Reliquary is in its third audit right now. That's been, like, a really slow burn. And, you know, retail hype is dying and dying and dying. So really it's, like, about making astute financial decisions and astute business development decisions. And making sure, like, releases are timed, releases are well funded, releases have a team behind them, and everything like that. So, you know, it is, a very interesting and stressful time. But, you know, like, I'm seeing what other teams are doing about it. Teams are collaborating really closely in the background, you know, sharing ideas and trying to leverage our collective power. So we'll see where Phantom ends up. I think Phantom teams are really smart, and a lot of them are pretty well positioned for this. You know, all of us fudding our own bags nonstop maybe like has a silver lining here, but yeah, it is really tricky. And the next 2 years are going to be really tricky.
I have two questions for you, Beavis. The first is, do you feel the things that you've built on Phantom have reached a point of maturity that this is now a requirement to go multi-chain? That's my first question. So like, have you guys reached a point where you feel like this is, if we're going to be a successful business, we need to do this?
Yeah. I mean, we've literally, like with Reaper, our strategists have totally like done every strategy that's secure and profitable to do. So Reaper has everything. So now like Reaper development has become, how can we abstract all of this information on Reaper.farm in a way that is really easy to use and can approach new users as opposed to let's just expand infinitely. So that's like where a lot of the conversation is going. On the Reaper end of things, because we have tapped Phantom's yield out. It's like, you know, not tapped out as in totally drained, although it is definitely lower than it was 6 months ago, seeing as like, you know, the coins have dropped. But like, as far as investment products, like there are now really severely diminishing returns on how we can expand Reaper. So, and that's kind of been a big part of like, how are we going to engineer a path to success for ourselves. And kind of a lot of the conversations we've had in the past 2 weeks are, you know, our strategists are probably like, you know, top S tier Solidity developers. And a lot of our talks have been, okay, they're getting diminishing returns on strategies. They're really, really valuable. How can we ensure that we can create software that the market actually needs right now or wants right now, that will kind of support Oath and whatnot. So a lot of it is like reallocating resources. And some of that is cross-chain, but like we're building infrastructure so that we don't need a ton of development power to go cross-chain. It's just like, you know, we're here with Reaper. We're developing a presence. We're engaging with the business development offices of whatever chain saying, hey, you know, we have all of these products, all of these services. How can you help us make your chain as good as possible? And I think we've done a lot of that on Phantom, and we're having a lot of these conversations with the foundation as well. But at this point, it is like, you know, we want to be around in 10, 20 years. And, you know, when the economy is this bad, you look at like a, you know, a 2 year runway and you're like, well, shit, you know, Chainlink has a 10 year runway. Phantom has a 10 year runway. And a lot of that takes maturity and time in the market and whatnot. So it's just about like, you know, really, really, really pushing and making sure like, you know, we're making the right moves and allocating our resources correctly. And this is the sentiment shared by every project on the chain right now, at least all of the top ones. It's how can we allocate resources in a way that will ensure we will exist indefinitely? Because now is when all of these questions are getting asked, because we didn't need to ask it in January. We need to ask it today. And every team should be asking themselves that isn't already, is how can we make it through this? Because if we make it through this, we become a brand name. If we make it through this, our competition will be severely lessened and we'll kind of rise, you know, to the top of the crop. So that's our goal right now. And, you know, for like the Citadel guys that, you know, maybe feel bad that we haven't been just releasing software nonstop, like a lot of this stuff needs to be done strategically because retail does not give a fuck at the moment. Retail is scared. The, you know, everybody is eager for stable coins. And we need to make sure that we're spending our money and we're spending our emissions and we are releasing software in a way that's actually beneficial to our holders, our investors, and ourselves. And, you know, in the meantime, like, you know, we've got a lot of cool stuff that we're working on. But it is like enterprise timeframes. Like we're not here to spin up a project in a week and shit it out. We're here to develop really seriously. So, you know, the next month will be really exciting, undoubtedly. But, you know, maybe even the next 3-4 months, for Byte Mason's fans. But just know, like, as much as I love our users and I love retail, the people sticking with us now, I hope we can make them a fuck ton of money. But our focus can't be on you right now. You know, I love our users, but the focus needs to be on business development, and ensuring that when retail comes back, we can give them the love. And Reliquary is going to be pretty soon. I mean, that's not hype. It's been pretty soon for like a while. It's undergoing its third audit right now. We had to re-engineer some mechanics, because myself and the other lead dev during production testing found a critical vulnerability, and, you know, redid some stuff. And now it's arguably even cooler, but, you know, we need to get another audit and we need these second opinions for sure. We're just like working on it. We're working on it. And, I want to make, like, the people here are the people I want to make money. Like the people that are still in it, still in the mix. I want to kind of bring up with us. So, not financial advice, you know, we're working hard. There are no promises, but, you know, we've got a lot of people working really hard. And check out our artist's new NFT project, Cursed Clowns, while I'm shilling bite mixes. It's minting tomorrow, and I've been tasking them with some really experimental specifications, to make this stuff happen. And these NFT projects, if you weren't aware, are a really good way to train developers in a low-risk environment. And it's also a really good way to give your artist an excuse to practice. I hope you guys like that. And we're going to continuously work on fun stuff, because that's how you train Ethereum engineers, is you give them stuff that doesn't require 100 million TVL. we're working on a lot of cool stuff kind of in tandem. But just know, like, a lot of the stuff we're doing is at the business to business and enterprise level.
Justin has shown up for the last 36 weeks straight, unpaid, to do this show. If he wants to fucking shill Bite Masons, he can shill Bite Masons. And it's probably going to happen every week. So if that's unagreeable to you, perhaps I would suggest a different show. Otherwise, just bank on that happening. And
I mean,
okay.
I didn't, like, if you, the amount of episodes, the percent of episodes I, like, shill our company in is, like, very small. And even, like, when you asked me to, I'm like, I feel bad about it. But definitely this is fine. Like retail needs to be patted on the head. It's like, hey guys, I know, like, you don't have perfect vision into what we're working on. Ninny Knickers, I know for a fact Ninny Knickers is probably like a semi homie of ours. That's like Hurley or somebody. Quit being a jerk, Ninny. Dude, I'll fight you.
I wanted to address this comment. I think it's interesting and on topic for where we started, which was, is the future multi-chain? Will we be rebranded as Optimism Alerts? Like, I was thinking about this whole thing more of Beethoven going over, Terra going over. Obviously, this is, you know, it's happening, right? So I looked at DeFi Llama, and Ethereum has 96 million in TVL. It's way down. Phantom's at like 2.3 billion. There's so much chain loyalty. It's almost like to a fault across the ecosystem, where, like, you see Alchemix, you see Alpaca Finance, you see all these people who reach this point of maturity on Ethereum at a $96 billion opportunity and say, shoot, we may need to go some other places because we need some new participants. We need new people in the ecosystem. And we're in a much smaller ecosystem. So I think it's, like, foolish to think that people wouldn't go multi-chain. And it doesn't have to be like a decisive, is Phantom Alerts now called something else? It's actually a huge opportunity for both the project and for you as a token holder. Like, they should be going there so you make more money. So that's actually, you know, it should be
Phantom
a great thing.
Becoming the Phantom projects are becoming unchained, you know? You can frame unchained anyway. Okay, unchained. Us going multi-chain, okay, unchained. You know, it's...
Well, so here's it's always been. It's always been, we support the builders. And the builders that I have the closest relationships with, the day ones, are going multi-chain. So I'm going to support the builders. And if that, and you know what's cool about that? We now have some crossover with other chains and other eyes and people that weren't looking at Phantom to begin with. And now we have new yield opportunities. And you know what I mean? Like, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Right now, we're Phantom only focused. But if a bunch of our friends start, you know, rolling up over to Optimistic, I'm sorry, that was stupid. But then, you know, then we may have to take a look, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So whatever.
And even more macro, like, you know, people going multi-chain as like a knock on Phantom. It's not. This is where the whole thing started. It just means that they're expanding and trying to find additional opportunity in the market. And then they totally reject the idea that new awesome protocols are going to continue to come. Like, look at Deus. They're here. There's people from Wall Street building out, you know, the future of the Bloomberg terminal. I'm just making that up. But like you said in the comments, but like it doesn't mean that new projects are not going to continue to pop up to take advantage of the awesome technology. And I think we just need to acknowledge the fact that, A, it's happening and it's a good thing, and that new people are going to come in and it's going to continue the way that it was, but it's just going to continue to grow. I think it's positive overall.
Yep. That's it. All right. Let's get the hell out of here, man. I'm hungry, dude. I haven't eaten today. My God. I got to start eating before these shows. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Hey, who's our resident like and subscribe officer, because you failed? Who is it?
Oh, dude.
One of you four bastards. All right. Like and subscribe. Like this video for me, please. And subscribe to the channel, please. So when we do some whatever garbage we're gonna have on tomorrow, you guys will get a notification for it. Actually, I'm going to the beach tomorrow. I don't want to talk to any of you guys until next week. Like, I love you. I don't want to talk to y'all. I need to get the hell out. This has been a tough week. We got to get the fuck out of here.
Crazy.
All right, like y'all. My name's Austin with FTM Alerts. With me, as always, $24, Crypto Clay, Double Sharp, and Mr. Justin Bibas. Catch y'all on the next live stream. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.